Welcome to Women Worth Knowing, the radio program and podcast hosted by Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn.
Hello, beautiful listeners. We are so glad you're back with us today to hear about another woman worth knowing. Today, our woman's first name is Agnes.
And love it.
I hear she is just a firecracker.
She is. She was definitely a firecracker, but to do what she did would take a firecracker because she had to cause a couple of explosions. And boy, did she. So we're going back to England, and we're going to one of my favorite places in England to meet Agnes Weston. And she was born in Bath, England.
Ooh,
yes. Anyone who's
Bath.
Anyone yes. who's been to England is just like, oh. So she was born March 26th, 1840. So she's born there after the time of Jane Austen.
Mm-hmm.
But Jane Austen, by this time, her novels are already known. And so she's kind of – Jane Austen helped to put Bath on the map, so to speak, the social
yes.
register. So interestingly enough, Agnes Weston's father was a lawyer. And she grew up in an upper middle class home in Bath, which would be, you know, very prestigious,
oh.
right?
I'm just picturing it in my mind.
Right.
One of those beautiful. Yes. Mm-hmm. And the like you said, the society that she would have grown
right.
up in.
And, you know, Bath is on the edge of the Cotswolds. It's just beautiful. Mm-hmm. You're surrounded by, you know, well, there's a river that runs through the middle mm-hmm. of it. And then it's got this Georgian architecture, which is almost golden buildings. It's so beautiful. And just the way the city is designed and the bridges. And
yes.
I mean, it's just beautiful.
Flowers everywhere in springtime.
Yes. Oh, and the Crescent. The beautiful Crescent,
yes.
which is where, you know, the upper class used to live.
And Sally Lunn's Buns, which has been there for hundreds of years.
Did you eat there?
Oh, yes. A couple
it's
times.
It's fantastic.
It still is fantastic.
I didn't think it would be that great. Sorry.
I wonder if Agnes went to Sally Lunn's. Of course she did.
Right, because it's one of the oldest restaurants in the world.
Yes.
Interesting.
Ooh.
Oops, sorry. It was, Bath, of course, was a social capital for the upper class to visit during the 18th and 19th century. And it's famous, again, for being the setting of Jane Austen's book, Persuasion, mm-hmm. which happens to be one of my favorite. In fact, on a episode to come, we're going to talk about the faith of Jane Austen, because there's a book that just came out that has to do with
that
the faith of Jane
yes.
Austen. And we want to talk
yes.
about where she was spiritually. But Agnes was an active girl, and her energy and gusto for the outdoors was very uncharacteristic for girls, especially upper middle class girls from Bath.
Yes.
And
supposed to be proper.
That's right. And these are the things she loved to do. Horseback riding. And this next one is going to just surprise you. Swimming in the 1800s.
Gasp.
Yeah, totally scandalous, right? Totally scandalous. Well, she's not only scandalous for what she liked to do in the outdoors, but she rejected her parents' church and Christian faith. And her parents were both ardent believers.
Oh.
And she rejected it when she was just a teenager. And she concluded then and there that the church was made up of 90% hypocrites and only 10% of the sincere.
Well, she could be right.
Mm-hmm. That was her experience.
Yeah.
So she felt that way, and she was rejecting the faith, rejecting the church, until a new cleric came to take over her parents' church. And his name was Reverend James Fleming. And he was not in the least but put off by Agnes' attitude. He was more like, oh, tell me why you have those feelings. Oh, right, I could see that too. And she was so taken back that he was interested, and he listened to all of her objections and to all of her complaints, and bore them patiently and just talked to her. But slowly he won her trust. Now, Reverend Fleming himself was unconventional. He advocated total abstinence. Now, remember, he's Anglican.
Yes.
So that is a rarity for a curate at that time. He also eschewed ritual. He was not interested in all the ritual of the church. And he advocated a more personal approach to Jesus.
More he was personal, way ahead of his time.
Right. More personal approach in prayer, a more personal approach as you read the Bible. Agnes eventually gave her life to Jesus because of the Reverend James' influence. Now, Agnes had always been an all or nothing type of person. So when she came to faith, she
gave, firecracker.
That's right. She gave it her all. She, both feet. If this is the path I'm in, I'm going to be all in. Immediately, she gave up all of the social outings of her time, like balls and receptions, and most of all, flirtations. She concluded that those were all frivolous. And she wanted to do something for Jesus that would count. One of her phrases was, "Lord, show me the next great thing I'm to do. Show me the next great thing." And she didn't mean that it was necessarily great for other people, but it would be great. It would mean a lot to the Lord.
Yeah.
She took up the organ, which was unusual for a woman of her era. Nevertheless, this all or nothing woman excelled at the organ.
Of course she did.
And it was a talent that she would enjoy and share with others for the remainder of her life. So she takes it when she's just, you know, an early 20s, and she becomes, an expert on it and continues to use that skill for the rest of her life. Agnes also taught Sunday school. And this, I love this part about her. She was especially attracted to the challenge of teaching and reaching the most unruly boys.
She said,
give me the hardest. In fact, they were nicknamed the unmanageables.
Wow.
So I love this. In Patricia St. John's, Jill St. John was an actress, but in Patricia St. John's autobiography, she talks about how this group of ruffians, as she was on her way to church, said she had her hat on and her gloves, and they said, "Oh, are you going to see the queen?" And she said, "No, I'm going to go see the king." And they said, "Well, will you invite us over to tea?" She said, "Yes, I will. You sit here, and when I'm done with church, on my way back, I will give you the address, and you can come to tea." And that started, this was after she and her sister came back from the mission field, but that started a Bible study. They started teaching those ruffians and they came to faith. Some of them even going into the ministry.
Wow.
So this is the same as Agnes. Agnes wants the unmanageable, the unruly boys. Mm-hmm. She loved them. And they said she was the only one who could manage. The loyalties went on both sides. She also took up charitable work in Bath, such as visiting those in the hospital and volunteering to correspond with a seaman who was being deployed. About this time, she met a woman named Sophia Wentz. Now, a little bit about Sophia. Sophia was born in Switzerland in 1947, so she's about 7 years younger than Agnes. And Sophia's father died when she was a little girl, and her mother moved to England with Sophia and her big brother, Louis. Louis joined the Royal Navy and rose to the rank of Vice Admiral. Now, this is important for the rest of this story. So Agnes, some accounts say that Agnes met Sophia when Sophia was vacationing in Bath, and others say that Sophia met Agnes when Agnes was in Plymouth area to visit the Royal Navy. And nobody knows which it really is. But from the time these two met, they were best friends.
Mm.
They were united in the same cause, the same heart, the same zeal for Jesus Christ. And they worked together and were best friends for the next 50 years.
Oh, that's so wonderful and rare. And what a gift. I love it.
So both of these women were concerned about the plight of the young seamen who were on their shore leaves. Now, you can understand how this would be something of concern to Sophia because her brother's in the Royal Navy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's of concern to Agnes because she's an all-or-nothing type of person and she's corresponding with this seaman and she's hearing all about his temptations. So there were about 4,000 young men training for the Royal Navy at this time in Plymouth. But there was no place for the majority of these young men to spend their Sunday afternoons at because they were too young.
Mm.
And the men that were old enough for the pups were, I want to say, pub bait, so to speak, because they would be taken advantage of and robbed or swindled out of, you know, their little allowances that they were getting from the Royal Navy. So Agnes and Sophia decided to provide an alternative place for the sailors to rest. Agnes was approached by some naval wives and men that she corresponded with, and they asked her to address them at a meeting in Devonport. This was 1870, and they decided to use Sophia's mother's home in Devonport to hold these meetings for young men. Now, at these meetings, they might arrange to have some music, a visit from a, you know, pastor to share, food, and general hospitality and welcome. Also, it could be Sophia or it could be Agnes that would share. And remember, Agnes could play the organ.
Yep.
So she could entertain them with music. She could play the hymns and they could sing along. And that was something that they would do at these times. The meeting became so popular that Sophia's mother's house was overcrowded. They needed a bigger venue. As we mentioned before, Agnes was the type of person that committed herself 110% to whatever she was doing. And when she realized that these sailors' meetings were to be her life's work, along with Sophia's life work, she gave up her upper class life in the respectable comfort and protection of Bath in order to bring wholesome teaching and hospitality to the sailors in the seediest dockyard cities of England.
That's quite a calling.
Isn't that?
Yeah.
I mean, it doesn't seem safe for two women.
No.
And, you know, I saw pictures of Agnes, and she was good looking. And so was Sophia when they were young. And yet neither of them married because this became their calling.
Mm.
She and Sophia created what would later become and still remains Sailor's Rest. Although it began with the first, they soon were opening rests in every dockyard where the Royal Navy anchored. In some of the cities where the rest opened, the taverns actually shut down because they didn't have enough business.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Isn't that what you want to hear?
I'd rather be over with the organ playing and the food and the music. And
right. And, you know, I think that what they did is they provided a type of comfort, a type of home environment, and a type of family feeling.
Yes.
And this, the men would rather be that, and it was safe.
Right.
It was safe and wholesome and edifying.
Longing in their souls.
Exactly.
Where the pubs couldn't.
Right. So the rest, and this is what I loved, came to be recognized by Queen Victoria.
Ooh, I love it.
Who gave her royal sanction to it so that they became and are still today the Royal Sailors' Rest.
Ooh, that's really fun.
Right.
I mean, this feels like a Jane Austen novel 100 years later.
Yes.
Because Persuasion and the...
Yes.
The naval and the
yes.
bath and all of
yes.
that. And
yes.
then here's this very specific
exactly.
group.
And she liked the unmanageables, remember?
Yeah.
And she wanted to provide something wholesome for these young men so they wouldn't be corrupted by the military. So they wouldn't be corrupted and they'd be able to continue to maintain marriages and happy home
mm-hmm.
lives.
Mm-hmm.
And that was really important to her, not just the men, but also the wives. In fact, she would visit the wives. She kept up communication with these sailors' wives while they were gone. She often wrote letters for the wives as well as she corresponded. At one point, she was corresponding with over 200 sailors.
And she thought, once again, all in.
Right. And she thought, I can't do this. But, you know, she would tell them, you know, chatty letters about what was happening at home and what was going on, you know, in the home life and what new inventions there were. So she decided to put together a magazine, you know, kind of that she would send out that was called Ashore and Afloat. It was more like a monthly letter, but, you know, kind of a periodical that would call that was called Ashore and Afloat. And she would often put a little note on it too, like, you know, to Harry, hope you're doing well. And, you know, your wife is doing great. you know, best wishes, Agnes, you know, or Proverbs 3:5-6, don't forget it. You need it for life, Agnes, you know. So she would, well, actually, she didn't go by Agnes. She went by Aggie.
Aggie. Okay.
Is that so cute? She was Aggie. So going back to the Royal Sailor's Rest, Queen Victoria just loved Agnes. Agnes became one of her favorite people, and they had many, many meetings and met on several occasions. And Queen Victoria was always elated to see Agnes because Queen Victoria was all about bringing wholesomeness to England, too. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And this would definitely do it.
And preserving families.
Exactly.
Sure. That's what they were doing.
Exactly. So Agnes went beyond just correspondence, just beyond the Sailor's Rest. She also worked out ways for the sailors to be able to get their pay sent directly to their wives and families. So there's no danger of them being swindled out of it.
Yes.
Or, you know, losing it to, you know, like a poker game or to, you know, one of those many vices that would tempt a sailor who is away from home.
Interesting.
So she ran a savings bank for some of the young men, too. They said, well, I don't have anyone to give it to. So she said, well, entrust it to me, and I'll let it accrue. And so when they got out of the military, they had this savings account that she could give them where they could buy, you know, they could get married, they could buy a house, they could provide for themselves with the money that had been saved. Mm. So, I mean, she was so enterprising.
Yes.
And so wise. Now, I love this too. She would purchase train tickets and sell them to the men on board ship. She would actually get on the ship and sell, you know, I'm talking about sailors and selling. She would sell the train tickets so that the men would not be waylaid from getting home. So they wouldn't be like tempted, like, oh, there's a tavern and then I'll buy my ticket. Or, oh, there's a pretty lady and then I'll buy my ticket. Or there's, you know, this temptation.
Clever girl.
So she would say, oh, it leaves as soon as you get off. You got 15 minutes to get over to that train.
Better run.
Isn't that smart? It was said of Agnes that she was non-judgmental. I think that's so important that she didn't condemn these men. She understood their struggle and she didn't condemn them. But she was also practical in her service, which we see with the train tickets. And we, you know, recognize that she was practical in the, you know, doing the ashore and afloat and the rests. And I mean, just looking to the practical needs.
Yes.
As well as the spiritual needs of these soldiers. She was known as a devout Christian. All those soldiers, those sailors knew this, that she loved Jesus and that she was doing it for Jesus. She said once her overarching motivation was to offer Jesus' love to the sailors and their families.
Beautiful.
And what, in a practical way.
Yes, practical way. And how that inspiration from the curate, James, that had been non-judgmental,
exactly.
Practical, I'll sit and listen to you. And she saw Jesus in him, and that drew her to Christ, which is now what she's doing to these men.
Right. And she's non-judgmental, like you said, and yet her love is very practical. I think about James, who said, you know, well, actually, the Apostle John said, let us not love in word and deed only, but in deed and in truth.
Yes.
And then, you know, James said, if you see your brother and they're hungry and you don't do anything, how have you shown your faith to them?
Yeah.
So this love was practical. It had this practical way to minister. And I love the way the doors just opened for her and Sophia, but they were and I think people didn't mind their pushiness because they realized their motivation was for these young men. And it seemed more that everyone got behind them and people were more than willing to serve and to help. And I think it's kind of like we have an outreach to the Marines called Armor of Light. Mm-hmm. And whenever, you know, they ask for donations, people will be like, I was a Marine. Or my cousin was a Marine, or, you know, my dad was a Marine. And they open their hearts And I think that was something probably that happened with Sophia and Agnes when people saw what they were providing and how they were trying to help and protect these young men who were fighting.
Basically on their own.
Right.
Let's just do this.
Right.
Figure out how to make it happen. And
right. And these young men were sacrificing.
Right.
They were having to learn discipline. Life was not easy on those ships.
No.
And so to provide that warmth and that hospitality in so many ways. And so she wrote this concerning her work. My work is, to say the least, varied. And the spirit of love, and I hope common sense, runs through it like a thread of gold.
Ooh.
No, I think, again, 1 Corinthians 13.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if we're not loving,
right,
then we're doing nothing. And yeah. So she said, it's got to be done not just for the sake of a sailor's rest, like, let's keep those boys moral, let's keep them from these vices, but because we love these boys, let's keep them from these vices. Because I love the unmanageables, like you said, because I understand their questions. I understand how tempting sin can be. I want to protect them from corruption. And it was all done out of love. Agnes died shortly after World War I at the age of 78 years old.
Mm.
She was the first woman to be buried with full naval honors.
Really?
Yes. Oh, it gets better.
Oh, I just got chicken skin on that.
Yeah, full naval honors.
Amazing.
But at her funeral, at the gravesite, over 2,000 officers crowded into Weston Mill Cemetery in Plymouth to honor her.
Wow.
Isn't that precious? Wow. Right. She was posthumously appointed Dame Grand Cross of the Order of the British Empire, and she received an honorary Doctor of Law degree from Glasgow University in honor of her work.
I feel like I should salute.
Right. That's the most part, she was uneducated, but they recognized the brilliance of her work. Now, some of the monikers that she was given during her lifetime were Mother Weston, the Mother of the Navy's Friend, the Lady of the Navy, Aggie.
Yes.
Or on her gravestone, it reads, the Sailor's Friend.
Oh.
Sailor's Friend. Now, after her death, Sophia, and I couldn't find anything more on Sophia than a couple of lines. I am so sorry, listeners. But after her death, Sophia assumed the work and continued it until her own death at 80 years old.
Mm.
Now, this is something else that's really important. The Royal Sailor's Rest are still in operation today wherever the British Navy anchors.
It's amazing. It's amazing.
Isn't that
it's
incredible?
Endured.
It's endured. And I mean, talk about a legacy.
Mm.
And you know, here's a woman who never has children. She doesn't have a formal education. She does not ever, you know, marry. There's no romance in her life, but she serves the Lord. And in serving the Lord, I think of that psalm that says the barren has had more children than the mother. And that's what she did. You know, Mother Weston, all these young men.
She was so loved.
Even at 75.
Yes.
Still so loved. And I think this is a woman worth knowing because, again, it started with just being all in.
All in. And the love.
Mm-hmm.
The love she saw from Reverend James.
Mm-hmm.
And the love of Jesus when she surrendered her life to him. And then her life was about giving that love to others. The more you give away, the Lord just fills you back up.
And I love that.
And we can all do that. We can love the way Jesus loves us. We can do that.
And her ministry started with Sunday school and the unmanageables.
Yes.
I like that.
Yes, you do.
As a first grade Sunday school teacher, and the Sunday school department at your church, I promise you, needs you.
Yes.
That might just be the very place where your own ministry starts.
That influence at such a young age.
That's right.
Never leaves. And the beautiful thing, too, is she did have recognition. I mean, all these awards and everything. But we don't hear that being what she was ever striving for.
Never. Never. In fact, it was posthumously. Yes. She didn't even know she got all those awards. She's just like, oh, good, we get to add royal to the Navy's rest. And that will make us official, and we'll get more of the young men in this way, and the parents will approve. And
I'm going to go have tea with Queen Victoria again.
That's right. And ask her if we can
just
get
normal.
If we can find another room at this dock.
Thanks, Cheryl.
Wonderful woman.
So good to hear about her.
Isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
I love it.
Thank you for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. For more information on Cheryl, visit CherylBroderson.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. For more information on Robin, visit RobinGunn.com or follow her on Instagram or Facebook. Join us each week for a lively conversation as we explore the lives of well-known and not so well-known historical and contemporary Christian women. If you think there is a woman worth knowing, we'd love to hear from you. Email us at WWK@CCCM.com. We hope you've enjoyed today's episode. Make sure you rate us on your podcast app, subscribe, and share it with a friend. Thank you again for listening to Women Worth Knowing with Cheryl Broderson and Robin Jones Gunn. Women Worth Knowing is a production of Calvary Chapel, Costa Mesa.